Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
I'm Rick Bucher. He's Jim Jackson. Whitlock and Wiley are off today. Coming up, we'll tell you whose side we're on in the Giannis Harden feud. But right now, we're joined by Fox NFL analyst LeVar Arrington and TJ Houshmandzadeh. So let's start at the NFL Combine, where we saw a lot of young talent this weekend, but two of the game's biggest prospects, Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa, didn't take the field. Burrow's is all but assured to go number one to the Bengals in April's draft. But not everyone thinks he's the better QB. ESPN's Todd McShay says that if the health of both guys was guaranteed, he would take Tua first. LeVar, we'll start with you.
Yep.
Are we sure Burrow will be better than Tua?
Well, I won't use plural. I'll use singular on this one, and I'll say no. I don't think that he, from my studying of the tape, is a better hands-down football player than what Burrow is. I think I look at Tua, and I think he's better, is what I'm saying, than Burrow. So the health does come into play, and there also are a lot of variables in terms of where they go. So if we're looking at it, who's going to be the better pro, I think the things that you can control, I go with Tua. The things that you can't control, what city you go to, what franchise you play for, what's the coaching situation, I'm not going to make a definitive decision.
All right, but give me the definition of what you can control. What is it specifically that you look at it and say Tua has already demonstrated that he's a better football player than Burrow?
I look at the way he throws the ball. I look at the way he commands the team, his control over the personnel, his read progressions. There are a lot of things. His footwork, his decision making.
Really?
I look at Tua. Yeah, I do.
Really?
I do. I look at Tua from and listen, that's just me. I think his accuracy is pretty good. I think it's better than Burrow. I think that Burrow had a better season based upon the type of year he had. But overall, body of work, I like Tua and I like his skill sets better than I like Burrow.
L.A., you my guy. And the answer to the question, are we sure? No, we're not sure.
Thank you.
It's too many variables. The coaching staff, the team you're going to play with. It's so many different variables.
A hip injury?
Now.
Are we discounting that completely?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Assuming.
I'm assuming.
He's
right.
Going to be okay. Now.
Correct.
You can't. Accuracy. Joe Burrow pretty much almost set the college football record. So accuracy, check for Burrow. The only check I get for Tua is arm. He has a better arm than Burrow. But what we, and being athletes, we know. Burrow's good here. Yeah. You don't see that. We don't see that. He's good here. And we all know if we're equally talented, what's going to separate us? It's my mental. It's what's between the ears. And that's where I think you don't see that with Joe. You work him out. You sit down and talk to him. You start, oh, man, he picks this. Why do you think LSU won a lot of 5 and 6 man protections? Because they had a quarterback that was able to understand, okay, this guy's going to come free. I'm going to change the protection. Or if I don't change it, this will be my guy. And so Am I sure? No, I'm not sure that Burrow's better, but the team you go to is so many different variables, but I know he's better mentally, and I'll take a guy that's better mentally over a guy that physically might be slightly more talented.
Yeah, the thing that it's such an inexact science when we're talking about drafting somebody.
Mm-hmm. Especially quarterbacks.
Especially quarterbacks, because we can go on all the variables, all the intangibles, all the measurables, but until they actually get into a system that fits how they play, we don't know. Now, if you think about it, if Joe Burrow goes to Cincinnati, the optics for the Bengals are perfect for them to draft him. One, he's injury-free. Two, he's won a national championship, you know, and he's done it in a different type of way coming in as a transfer, okay? But also, he's from Ohio, and he's a safe pick because now if you Cincinnati and you draft him and he doesn't quite work out,
I think we all thought he was the best
one. We always thought he was the best one. But if you take Tua, because of the injuries and something else happens, then they look upon that a lot differently. And I look at it in the league, too, a lot of times in regards to who's better. And it goes so much back to that. I think Phillip Rivers is excellent quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks. But because he's been in San Diego and hasn't had the success as maybe a Tom Brady, you tend to look at him and say that he's not comparable to a Brady because he hasn't won as much.
I think both players potentially will land with franchises that aren't successful franchises.
Right.
So I think that it's going to be difficult to measure them out. Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson are on Super Bowl contending teams.
Sure.
Whereas if Tua ends up in Miami and Burrow ends up in Cincinnati, now you're talking about what you're speaking
now,
on.
Now, if that does happen, Cincinnati
probably has a better chance.
It's no probably. Yeah. Like with when they get Jonah Williams back, first round pick from Alabama last year, AJ Green comes back, one of the top four or five receivers in the league, no question. Joe Mixon, they have talent offensively where Joe can look and say, I got some pieces I can work with. It's similar to what he had at LSU with those guys on outside. It's the infrastructure that you're unsure about.
The toughest place to be in that situation. If you're a Dolphin, you have games you can win and you can play well because it's not as strong a division or as strong conference as that AFC North. You're playing against defenses in the AFC North.
Sure.
And to me,
you're playing against Bill Belichick in the AFC
East. That's about it.
And the Buffalo Bills defensively.
This year. Okay, recency effect.
But
I'm not going to sit there and trip out over where Miami is playing versus where Cincinnati is playing. You got to play against Baltimore twice a year. You got to play against the Steelers twice a year. And for what it's worth, in some weird type of way, you got to play against Cleveland twice a year. So to me, when you look at the North, I think it's going to be a much more difficult task for whatever quarterback goes to that team and has to play. And you're seeing Baker Mayfield has to go through it right now.
My biggest concern is being a Cincinnati native, that the Cincinnati Bengals are all in on Joe Burrow. That's my biggest concern about whether he's the better quarterback. But I look at Tua being 6 feet tall, major catastrophic hip injury, and he's left-handed. Mm-hmm. We don't have a left-handed quarterback in the league. You talk about where he's going to go and how you're going to fit that system. Everybody's going to have to adjust to that left-handed quarterback. That's no small thing. So when I add that and I look at Burrow, and the one thing that I see as a distinguishing feature for me when it's making the jump from college to the NFL is it's not just a matter of hitting open receivers, it's throwing receivers open. And what I've seen, and again,
it's what he does best.
But that's what Joe Burrow does, is he throws guys open, and I just haven't seen enough of it, partly because of the way Alabama runs their offensive system. I haven't seen him have to do that. He's throwing much simpler passes than Joe Burrow did.
How many phenomenal seasons has Joe Burrow had as a quarterback, a starting quarterback?
How many do I need?
More than one.
Why?
More than one. And I'm going to tell you why. If he was that good, why didn't he do it at Ohio
State?
It's
what we just talked about. What did I just say earlier?
Why didn't he do it at Ohio State?
You can't show how good you are mentally. In practice, it's hard to do that. The intensity isn't there. It's not the same. Now, it's hard.
That sounds like an excuse.
No, that's just.
No, I know you don't like excuses.
That's just the truth.
That sounds like an excuse.
Because when he got his chance, he played better than any quarterback he was behind at Ohio State.
I'm not excusing what he did previously.
Where
did he just finish at? LSU.
He played better than every quarterback in front of him.
Yes. He didn't play better than JT Barrett. He didn't play better than Dwayne Haskins. He played better than those guys.
This to be continued. To some other young stars, Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson.
Thumb wrestle in the break.
We'll come back to this. Lamar said over the weekend that he hates playing Mahomes because he scores so many points. Either way, both of their careers are off to incredible starts, with Lamar winning MVP this season, while Mahomes won the award last year and just brought home a Super Bowl. LeVar, do you think Mahomes versus Lamar could reach Brady Manning levels?
It could, but is it likely? I don't think it's likely. Again, you're talking about two of the greatest football players, like one through four, five, to ever do it. They get an opportunity to meet 17 times. Look at the amount of success that Tom Brady has had. Peyton Manning is more, I guess, approachable in terms of Super Bowl appearances. But if we're talking about talent, I think that Peyton Manning is even in the discussion of being a better quarterback than what Tom Brady is. He's just not a better winner than what Tom Brady is.
And there's no
there's always the conversation because of how talented Patrick and Lamar are. But they are a long way away from two matchups already. Patrick is 2-0 against them. They have 15 more games, and within those 15 games, the relevancy has to continue to grow. I think they're too far away for me to say this is the next coming of Peyton and Tom Brady.
Conventional wisdom, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
The answer would be no. To reach those heights and proclaim that this early in their career, That's tough. The only thing I will say is the excitement level. When you look at that schedule and Baltimore plays Kansas City, you're going to make sure you're watching that game.
True.
Now, from that perspective, the excitement level of seeing when it's for sure going to be a Monday night game. When is it? Oh, I got to make sure I'm not doing anything. I have to watch this game. So from that perspective where you get everybody, you got eyes in tune.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about it the whole week prior. That level, yes, the excitement level, but on the field, it's so much, man, that they have to do just to get to that point. We're talking what LeVar just said, two of the top six or seven quarterbacks to ever play in the NFL.
Ever.
It's a long way to go.
But is it true that because Brady and New England were so dominant for so long that his superstardom kind of, I think, exceeded expectations, what they were able to do, how they were able to play, the amount of winning they were able to do kind of broadened, a bigger shadow on what New England was. So when they played against a Peyton Manning who probably didn't have the success as much, even though he went to a couple Super Bowls, but didn't have the success. But if you look at the yards, the TDs and the statistics of a Peyton Manning and compared to a Tom Brady, you have a natural fit. I think it's different with Lamar and Patrick Mahomes. Both stable franchises, will one be able to dominate more than the other? Will they be able to get
but
back?
Both Tom Brady and Peyton Manning went to stable organizations. Right. I mean, the Colts were
They weren't as stable. He stabilized them.
He stabilized.
Well, some would say Marshall Faulk played a very large part of that and Tony Dungy. But when you look at what Tom Brady was able to accomplish, you're probably more willing to put Lamar Jackson on the Tom Brady side. And you're more willing
on
to put Patrick
side
Mahomes.
Or the number side? What are you talking about?
More prepared to win. Like coming in with not such a high pick, but coming in and having an opportunity to win. They almost came in the same way, right? Like Tom Brady had to come in. He didn't play his first year, but came in based off of injury. Lamar Jackson comes in based off of injury, plays prematurely and does well. You look at Patrick Mahomes and Peyton Manning, even though Patrick Mahomes did have to sit out and watch Alex do it.
Right.
You're still looking at Peyton and Patrick as can't-miss prospects. They're like can't-miss guys. So that's
You had the questions about Lamar coming in, which is a lot different than
than what it would be for a Peyton Manning or a Patrick Mahomes.
But did you know right away that Brady was going to be what he was based on where he was?
And that's why I think he's more – if you're peering up who they are, it's Lamar and Tom – it's Patrick and Peyton.
But Lamar has had so much individual success early on compared to Brady.
Early on.
Yeah. Both of them.
But that's my point. You have two guys who have already won league MVP.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Brady and Manning didn't do it until 6 years into their respective careers that either one of them won a league MVP. I also believe that what we're not taking into account is the change in the quarterback position and how dynamic it is. Both of these guys are instrumental and can do more with the way the rules are now than before. So for the same reason that you want to watch, they're going to have the opportunity to put their imprint on every game that they play. And when they go to head-to-head, because they're so similar, look, it's going to be awfully hard because that's a long resume success.
That's a long
run. But do I think they have a chance? Yeah, I think they have a chance.
That's the best tandem I would put, or combination I'd put together right now and say, these two have a chance to create that type of rivalry.
You know what helps is you have Andy Reid with Mahomes, right, and you have Harbaugh with Lamar Jackson. They got stable coaches, good ownership. One just won the Super Bowl, Super Bowl MVP, and the other one won the regular season MVP in Lamar Jackson. And so it looks like they're on this collision course every year. And if it's the longevity of it, though. Peyton and Brady, they were great for so long. Yeah. It's hard.
That is the hardest part.
You can't hit quarterbacks these days. There's no reason that they can't stick around a long time. Time now for a big story presented by Hyundai. Let's move to Dallas, where, according to the NFL Network's Ian Rapoport, the Cowboys are planning to use the exclusive franchise tag on Dak Prescott if the two sides can't agree on a new contract by March 12th. Obviously, this wouldn't be the long-term deal Dak wants, but if the team goes that route, the QB would make around $33 million next season. LeVar, should Dak be satisfied if he gets tagged?
Satisfied? No. Okay with it as a compromise? I would say yes. And again, I'm looking at it from the perspective of, if you're talking about the new CBA deal needing to be finished by 21, so you have a year to get that done. If you're not going to get the numbers that you want and you're going to have the opportunity to play again this season, you're going to get much more by getting that franchise tag rather than taking a long-term deal that's shorter money than what you wanted and expected. So it now positions you one more time. You hate to say it, but you got to prove yourself during this season one more time. And then during the course of that season, maybe you get that long-term deal done that's more in line with the new CBA deal to come versus the lack of inflation to doing a deal now that maybe lands you in the 35, 36 million range per year. So I think it's a winning situation, but far from being content with it. You shouldn't be okay with it.
Should he be satisfied?
No.
So no, he should
not. He can't be satisfied because he wants a long-term deal. And he wants that long-term deal to be based off of the financials of the new CBA agreement coming forward. So he shouldn't be satisfied, but he should feel like it's a win, in my opinion.
I'm not satisfied with it. I'm not okay with it. And I just look at it from a simple dollars standpoint. When you get a long-term deal, we would assume it's going to be at least 75, 80 million guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And so from that perspective, I'm getting 33 and I could possibly get 80. Math, that's $47 million difference. Mm-hmm. So that's why he's not going to be happy with it. And I said,
but it's much more than he's already making.
I mean, Dak Prescott now.
Much more than he's already making. Right.
You know this all too well.
Right. Over the
he
first
made
four years.
$2 million last year. His game checks is going to be $2 million per week. So he's going to look at it from that perspective and say, oh, man, I like this. But is he – no, he deserves a long-term deal. What amount? That's debatable, and that's why we're here. But, no, he should be upset about this.
I would be, too, from this perspective. History dictates that the ownership at the Cowboys, when they're behind the player, they're going to pay. And I take it back.
If they're what? If behind the player.
If they're behind the and I take it from, forget the numbers and statistics. I go back to look at what Tony Romo did when he signed his extension in 2012. Okay? The numbers are eerily similar. And at that time, it was Jerry Jones that this is my franchise quarterback. Mm. He had no problem doing that extension for Tony Romo, who had one playoff win. Kind of like that. Okay? But this whole time, he's been saying Dak is our franchise player. But yet and still, the contract has yet to come. So if you're Dak and his agent, you're looking at the rhetoric. Forget the numbers. You're looking at the rhetoric coming
out. You're looking at history like, hey.
And you're looking at history and saying, well, when you said it for Romo here, that he was our franchise quarterback, he had a year left on that deal. And we tore it up and said, we're going to extend it. So now I'm here, I'm your franchise quarterback, and now you don't, you want a franchise tag. You want to see if I'm good enough one more year. So yeah, I'd be in my feelings a little bit if I was that.
I can tell that I'm up here with three former players who are like, pay me the money.
Why wouldn't you?
Because he's going to get paid next year, like with the exclusive tag, he's going to get paid like he's a top five quarterback for next season.
So would you prefer $33 million or $80 million?
It's not a matter about what I prefer. Is he going to be satisfied? No, probably not, because he wants a long-term deal. Should he be satisfied? Yes, he should be, because he's getting $33 million, and Dak Prescott is not a top five quarterback. But he's going to be paid like one next season. So it's not what he wanted, but if he should he be satisfied? Yes, he should be satisfied. He's not Aaron Rodgers. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not Russell Wilson. I can name five guys that are better quarterbacks.
If
but
he's not
be
that, put
the
non-exclusive
top.
Tag on him and say, let's see what you
and
can
do. And he's probably better than a Goff and a Wentz, but and some would debate it. Some would debate some of the other names. But, again, I think when you're looking at, I don't know what the accuracy of what took place with Tony Romo, what was going on, but they have to still be able to sign Amari Cooper or sign
that's not Dak's problem.
It's not Dak's problem, but it is the franchise's problem. So where I'm looking at it saying it may make sense, that CBA deal may give this team, it will give this team a little bit more breathing room to make guys more signable moving forward. So if you
what they're saying is, we're going to franchise you, Dak. Amari, you're going to get your deal because we can't franchise you. So you're going to get paid.
Maybe. Right.
That's basically what they're saying.
But wouldn't you, if you were in Dak's position too, you've heard the rhetoric for the last few years about we want you here. Here's a chance for me to sign now. And Rick, here's it from a player.
Do you tell me or do you show me?
Exactly. Here's it from a player's perspective.
Right.
We understand he's going to make more money. We get that. Right. Now, from a longevity perspective, I'm his agent. I want to get a deal done now to ensure that he has the money. I don't know what's going to happen during the course of this year. Anything can happen.
That's why you're not okay with it.
I get to the back. That's why I'm not okay with it. Because if I get to the back end when that CB is up, depending on what the structure is financially, what if something happens during the course of the year where I can't get to that point?
Yeah.
I understand that. But he is asking to be paid $33 million per long term. That's what the demand is.
No, it's more. I think it's more of a demand that he's asking for.
At the very least, it's $33 million per long term.
They're not giving him $33?
Would you give him $33?
I would give him $33. That would be my cap. That's my ceiling. It's 33. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
But then they already reportedly offer like $32 million already.
But see, that was last year. When you factor into his base salary last year, per year average, it's really not 33. It drops to 27, 28.
I think it's a compromise personally to take the franchise tag. It's a risk. It's more of a risk on Dak's part, but it is certainly way, way more than what he's making right now. I think it's a compromise looking at the possibility of the CBA deal and trying to get other players signed.
We're joined now by three-time NBA champ, B.J. Armstrong. Let's move to the association, where a feud between two major stars is heating up, with Giannis and James Harden continuing to trade barbs in the media. Back during the All-Star draft, Giannis said he didn't pick Harden because he wanted someone who passed the ball. Then Harden fired back, telling ESPN's Rachel Nichols that he wishes he was 7 feet tall and could just dunk on everyone, adding, it takes no skill. But this weekend, Giannis said his game is more than just power, for sure. Jim, whose side are you on here?
You know, I thought about this when all the stuff started going down. I don't know if I take a side. I kind of like Giannis.
What?
I don't know if I take a side because I like Giannis the way he put it. Now, you got to understand Giannis, though, but Giannis is the type of player. He don't really want to work out with other guys. He don't want other guys to kind of peer into what he does. So he don't care. He came into the league not expecting to have an impact. He grew his game from basically this young 18-year-old, 180-pound kid to this league MVP and one of the greatest players in the world. So was he probably joking? Yeah, but within jokes, there's a truth.
Sure.
And that's why he didn't get James. And of course, James is going to shoot back because that's who James is in regards to James is not always going to kind of let you in his world. He's going to say his little things, get in and out. But I think this one hit a little bit more personally.
Yeah, the way James said it.
The way James said it in regards to Giannis's skill set.
Right.
And not having one.
Right.
And that's it.
He so insulted him.
He did insult him. So I'm going to give, if I was a graded, I'd give an A to James for that. But I don't side with either one. I think, actually.
Wait a minute.
I don't side for either one. For what? I think it's stupid.
Pick a side. What do you mean?
I think
what
it's stupid.
About
I don't have to pick a side.
There is a debate here.
It's not a debate.
No.
You asked me my opinion.
Oh, no, no.
My opinion is I don't care either one.
Ultimately,
I just want to see both,
you know,
when they
is?
Play.
No.
The hype around it. Other than that, I don't care.
BJ, I'll get to you in a second.
Okay. What?
No. Here's the thing. This really is a debate about who is the MVP.
Who?
And who's game?
No, not this year.
No. That's where it started.
No debate.
And that's where it's continued.
There's no debate who's the MVP.
That's why these guys are going back and forth.
There's no debate who's the MVP this year.
Who is that?
Giannis.
Okay. Who was it last year?
No, we said this year.
I'm asking you, who was it last year?
Who got it last year? Giannis.
Okay, so that's
what I'm talking about.
I voted for James Harden.
Okay, but who got it?
Giannis.
So it's no debate.
There's still a debate.
How's
these,
a debate?
Because these guys are still debating it. Are you telling me that James Harden doesn't look? The Houston Rockets put out a tweet saying we respectfully disagree. Obviously, the Houston Rockets do not believe that Giannis Antetokounmpo was the MVP.
Of course,
last
they didn't.
Year.
But the Houston Rockets didn't think when Russell Westbrook run it either. So. Hello?
Okay.
Anybody other than their player, they're not going to think about
but
that.
But you're saying so there's don't have, no debate. There
no,
is
no,
a
I said
debate.
There's no debate for me. I don't care who's right or who's winning, who's right or wrong. I like to see them go back and forth because it adds more intrigue when they play each other.
I'm putting you on Team Harden.
You can't put me on Team Harden.
Yeah,
can't put
I'm
me on
putting
team
you
Harden.
On Team Harden.
I gave him an A for his response,
first,
though.
Well, first, where you at? That's first.
He insulted him and you gave him an A for
I gave him an A. It's a great response.
Can we at least get the facts correct? We know that James Harden averages over 7 assists a game.
Okay.
Okay, so he does pass the ball. Okay. And we also know that this kid, Giannis, I saw this kid when he was over there in Greece. That kid was only like 180 pounds.
Okay.
And when he played when he came to the NBA, some thought he was a point guard, and he did play point guard.
Jason
so without
Kidd.
Question, this kid has skill.
Give it to him.
So I'll question. Okay, so now... Now we got a little bickering, and I think...
We got the ego.
We got
the egos.
And we, as former players, he's got to respond back that way. What was James Harden supposed to say? Nothing? He's got to say something.
Why does he have to respond?
Well, I think your ego...
He doesn't have to respond. When Shaq said something about Kobe before, about winning the championship, you know what Kobe did? Kobe went and won two more championships.
Right.
That was his response.
And Shaq, meanwhile, did take insults, right? That's what Harden did. And Harden didn't actually even directly address it. He said, I wish I could be 7 feet.
Okay.
I know, but that's kind of a passive-aggressive thing.
You know he
thing.
Was talking
if you're going to come
you
at me,
that's
come
about.
At me.
That's what these kids do today, right?
But
that's what they do today.
I don't know if I'm putting Harden in the kid category.
But hold on, Mr. Question. So
Giannis is younger than him.
Whose side are you on? Remember
yes.
when I asked me that, I said,
yes.
I don't care.
Oh, no.
Whose side are you on?
Oh, I like this. Yeah, go
Since
ahead.
You said all the facts. You put all the
We're
facts on the table.
We're just handing the baton down here.
You
put the screws on that.
And you looked at me like I was crazy when I said, I don't care. Whose side are you on?
Well, if I had to pick a side, I can't pick a side. I have to be exactly what you're saying because they're both right in the sense that, you know what, when you listen to Giannis' response on television and you listen to the full interview, Giannis was responding to a question. I thought it was in jest. Like, it was fun. Charles made a...
Right.
Here.
Right.
But if you listen to the soundbite sounds like something entirely
separate.
Different.
Right. Separate. You have to put it in context. But here's the thing. If you go all the way back to last year, there was a game where Giannis stopped Harden. And then he talked. The smoke started way before this. They've had their back and forth prior to this, and Giannis has taken part in it. I am, so we can have somebody who says something on this show, I am Team Giannis without question. And I voted for James Harden as MVP last year. But the suggestion by Harden, it's dead wrong. And you guys well know, you can have a lot of assists, and you're not a passer. You're a guy who's either taking the shot or I'm getting a dime out of it. That's not the same as being a passer. That's what Harden is. Harden's always going to get numbers off of the play, one way or the other. Harden, look, his saying that he's just 7 feet and he just dunks, that he suggests that that's what Giannis is, that's just flat out wrong. What Giannis said in response to Charles's question about why didn't you pick the dribbler, and he jokingly says, because I want somebody who passes the ball, and then after the game says, we went after whoever Harden was guarding. Those are facts. Those are facts. Giannis is speaking facts. Harden is getting into his feelings, and he's getting insulted.
But that's why I said it was a little bit more personal when he said it like that from Giannis to Harden.
Right.
In regards to that, because that's not the first time James has heard that. In regards to not passing the basketball. So he came back and basically said that Giannis is one-dimensional, which he's not. Because, one, he's improved his jump shooting. In between the ears, more important.
Sure.
Because he's willing to take the shot. Okay, and his passing has improved from year to year. So the back and forth to me is more ego-driven than anything else. But it was a heck of a response right there off the cusp by James Harden. You got to give him some love on that. Whether he was right or wrong, it was still pretty good, though.
And you're asking me, do I like the beef?
That's what I said.
I love the beef.
Right, I love it for the NBA just to have some kind of 100%. It's just like Cleveland and Golden State going back forth to forth.
Right.
People didn't like it for so long, but you knew something was there.
Yes.
Okay? Now we look at Giannis when they play against Houston. Okay, before it was just Milwaukee playing against Houston.
Right.
Now you got all the things in question. No. So from the media perspective, it gives us something.
I'm going to give you the opposite side of what we were just talking about and what we appreciate. To a battle on the court where LeBron James and Zion Williamson faced off in an epic showdown last night. LeBron and the Lakers won the game, but LeBron gave Zion a hug and some words of wisdom and then praised the rookie after the game, saying the NBA is in good hands. But he also clapped back when questioned about mentoring young players that he's competing against.
Anybody that says that, LeBron, why would he do that while he's playing? It's a show and sign of weakness. You know, he's buddy-buddy with the guys that he's going against. Tell him to kiss my ass. All right? With a smile, too. Appreciate it.
All right, Jim, I can't wait to find out where you're going on this. Is LeBron mentoring young players, as he referred to it, a sign of weakness?
No, but he's been doing this his whole career. Even when he was young, he would talk to different players. I mean, in regards to maybe adding some advice, especially younger players coming into the league. When I was in the league, I would play against an older player and have a good game. And maybe after the game, during the hug, or they would come and say, keep doing this, keep this up.
Right.
It wasn't a sign of anything else more than continuing the game and wanting me to continue to hone my craft more than anything else. So I don't understand how it could be a week.
Who were these guys?
I remember playing against Michael Jordan. I mean, right. We would go at it. You know, and after the game, he would just say something like, man, I appreciate how you work. Now, he did tell me one time that, you know, you talking stuff, that's why you're wearing my shoes. But other than that.
But he said it to you. But he didn't say it publicly.
No, he said it to me. But see, if you look at the interview after the game, you know, I don't know who asked LeBron the question after the game, but they asked him, what did you say to Zion?
Yeah.
He said, that's personal. You know, that's between he and I. So he kind of addressed that at the end of the game.
For someone who played with Michael.
Well, I think the undertone or the underlying thing is we're always comparing everything LeBron says to Michael Jordan. That's what we're really saying.
Throw Kobe in there too.
But yeah, we could throw him in there. Look, LeBron has demonstrated over the years since he came in this league that his authentic self is he is a person that speaks. Mm-hmm. He's a person that cares. He's a person that gives. And he's always accepted that responsibility. So no one can say all of a sudden now in year 17, he's different than when he first came in the league. This is who he really is.
Sure.
But what we're really saying without saying it is we're comparing his personality, his style of leadership to one of Michael Jordan, which was the exact opposite. Michael really wasn't saying anything to anyone. Right. It can even be argued he never even passed the torch to guys because he was constantly competing on and off the court. And Michael knew exactly what he was doing. So I think that is what we're really saying without saying it. But LeBron has always been this way. I have to commend him for that, for accepting these young players, because these players today, unlike when we came in, they have no experience. And they're looking for mentorship. They're looking for someone who knows. And LeBron certainly is a great example.
Well, also, too, when you're comfortable in your space to where you're at, you don't worry about letting in some inside knowledge out. Now, I will say this. I think Kobe on the back end of his career was more amenable to doing that, seeing the immortality part of it. But during his career,
No.
The secret sauce was staying there. You know what I mean?
Sure. No, he literally said that to me.
Oh, yeah.
And then the next thing I know that he's bringing guys into the Mamba Academy to teach him his tricks. I'm like, okay, the worm has turned. I think essentially that happened with Kobe because Kobe got to a point where he realized, I'm not at the top of the mountain anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so now I'm thinking about my legacy and can I hand it off to the next generation? And I can't help but feel that some of that is going on with LeBron at this point.
And
at
Zion,
35.
Or just Zion in
just
particular.
Just in general. And I would say that it is a sign of weakness because we've always perceived it as a sign of weakness that LeBron didn't have that same edge that Kobe and Michael Jordan had. Because he was a giver, because he didn't set that hard line and say, no, this is mine, this is my kingdom, and you can't have it. And so this is more of the same.
But isn't that a different kind of leadership, though? Because he didn't have to say, this is my kingdom, this is my domain. He just went and took it. And he took it in a different form.
But I want to say this. With him being a parent, and he has a son that's around 15, 16 years of age, I think that gives you a different perspective. And the perspective would be that these kids, 19 or 20, are closer to his kids' age and what they're used to doing. So as a parent, I heard him. As a competitor, I get what you're saying, too. But as a parent, I bet if Zion and his guys came to his house, I bet they're probably hanging out and playing video games
with him before he would actually
hang out with him. So I think you get to that stage, 35, where all of a sudden you become the uncle.
Right.
That's right.
You become the uncle at 35. And then at my age, now you're like a dad figure. You're right. You know, I haven't made the grandfather figure. But right now, LeBron is in that uncle stage. Right.
But that whole general mentality of how you view your place in the league and who you're competing against. And maybe it's some of it, too, as he's looking at Zion. He goes, you're not me yet. You're like, this is good hands. I feel comfortable complimenting you because I don't really see you as a threat to me right now.
Well, it goes back to what I said. His standing on where he's at personally, he doesn't mind giving that up because his legacy is basically cemented to where he's going to be. Now, he can add more onto it if he wins a title in L.A., but he's comfortable in his own space to be able to provide that kind of information and knowledge.
Yeah, that to me was part of the criticism of LeBron from the very beginning. BJ, you hit on it. The fact that he didn't approach the game the way Michael did. Michael was always looking for one reason to abuse you every single night he played. And we didn't see that from the beginning with LeBron. There were times where he was on and times that he was off. And maybe that's why his durability has been what it's been. Maybe he's just the smarter cat in extending himself. But the reality is, it was a different approach, and it felt wrong to anybody who saw how Jordan and then Kobe came along. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away, Darnell.
Yes, sir. Let's talk some hoops.
All right.
There's still no timetable for Steph Curry's return after missing most of the year with a broken hand. Meanwhile, Steph's old teammate, Kevin Durant, has missed the entire year so far with his new team, the Brooklyn Nets. We know these guys dominated the league together for 3 years. Want to ask you, who do you think has a better chance of getting back to the finals, Curry or Durant?
I'm going to go with the Brooklyn Nets and Kevin Durant. Mm. Now, you got dicey situation in both cases, right? We got injured stars on both sides. Mm-hmm. It just happens that one pair play in the Eastern Conference. And if I look at their supporting cast, the young players that they have, if you're telling me I got Taurean Prince there, Caris LeVert, Spencer Dinwiddie, versus a lot of unknowns on the Warriors' end of things. Look, I don't know if either one of them is going to get there, but if you're asking me which one's had the better chance, I'm going to have to go with KD and the Nets.
I'm going to have to say KD just from the standpoint that he is an ideal basketball player at 7 feet. He can play the 2, the 3, the 4, the 5 on both sides of the ball, especially in today's game. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be easier to build a team and play around his versatility because we play in a game now, it's a positionless basketball, and it would be much easier to build a team around a Kevin Durant as your centerpiece than a Steph Curry. Steph Curry, look, you know, he's had an amazing run, but it's very difficult to do that as a point guard and his size. But I think KD is, without question, and hands down, would be the better guy to build around.
First, Darnell, you see anything? You see my phone anywhere?
That hairline looking good. I had to get it later.
But I agree with you from Brooklyn's perspective on a couple different things. One, It's tougher for Golden State in the West in today's game just because the Lakers and Clippers up top, Houston, the way they're changing. Yep. Even on the back end with the Pelicans and Memphis playing well.
They're coming.
And they're coming. We didn't even talk about the muddle group in the middle.
Sure.
Plus, if you look at the West and also Golden State, you know, the conventional wisdom, okay, this year they'll get a great draft pick. Well, that's not necessarily the case to a person they need to come in right away.
Sure.
And if you want to trade that pick, you still don't have enough flexibility, cap room to kind of get the guy you need to fill in anyway. So they're struggling with a lot of ways to maneuver the roster to get back up even to a championship level, even with, you know, Steph coming back and with Klay coming back. So I hedge towards, and I say Kevin Durant, in the East, I think there is an opportunity if, you know, things go well with Kyrie and Kevin Durant and their supporting cast, and they still have a little bit of more flexibility with their cap, depending on what Caris LeVert chooses to do, what they
and
do with Torrey and Prince, and where even though it's going to come down next year. But the easier path to resistance is over in the East, you know, when you look at it. So that's why I think from that question, I got to go with Brooklyn.
Real quick, all you guys just picked the Nets just now. Yeah. It sounds like to me you're saying the Golden State dynasty is over.
No, no.
Is that what you- What you saying, Jim?
The easier path to get to the finals.
I'll say that.
You'll say it, Rick?
I'll say that. He's,
it's over?
No. Yeah. I mean, as a dynasty, for sure. Can they win another one? This is the difficulty because you do have this draft pick. And immediately people are thinking, oh, you're going to get a top pick. You're going to get the number one pick. How long is it going to be before that guy is a championship caliber player? Looking at this draft, right? Well, you don't have that many years. I mean, quietly, the thing about Steph and Draymond and Klay, they weren't one and dones. These guys are all into their 30s, and they've all had a significant injury now of one or another. And you can speak to this, and I'm glad you're here, because the grind and the physical wear and tear of going to the finals multiple times, I don't think people take into account what that does that you don't get back.
Well, I think the Warriors, if you look at those three guys that you're talking about now, they've all put in probably somewhere upwards to 100 games of extra games in a condensed amount of time in the playoffs. And you're playing the playoffs at a much higher level than you do during the regular season. So it takes a toll. I think it would be very difficult for those guys because all of those guys depend on speed and quickness. And those are, you know, two of the elements that you need to play at a high level. But Kevin Durant is 7 feet when he's 32, 33, 34, 35. Which, and I think that's what gives him a significant advantage because he's going to be tall no matter what, where the other guys are dependent on their speed. And
to your point, too, about dynasty, if you look at the way the league is now, even in East or West, what team can really be a dynasty where they win the next 3 out of 4, 4 out of 5?
Clippers.
The Clippers, you think they can? Do you think they can win the next, like, 3 out of 4?
Combination. Having because like a Landry Shamet where Montrezl Harrell is.
Even with the injury. See, to me, I look at Paul George and Kawhi because of the injury perspective.
But the beauty is that you have those guys so you don't have to lean on any particular guy and be competitive. So I think they have a little more
I think on paper, Rick, you would look at the Clippers on paper. But the best players, the best teams, their players play more often. Okay, the best players. And the Clippers don't play enough games yet. We're still this late in the season are saying the Clippers aren't playing enough games that we can say definitely this is who they are or this is who they're going to be. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little weary of it, but I like their team on paper. But if they can put in enough games to prove that, I think that's another thing.
That's a subject for another day. Darnell, by the way, did anybody win the XFL Super 6 this weekend?
Yes.
Been meaning to ask.
Yes, sir, they did. I want to give a huge shout out to all the fans who walked away with some cash. And before the games kick off next weekend, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6 app and play for free for your chance to win.
LeVar Arrington and TJ Husmanzada are back. Let's return to the NFL where the Tom Brady free agency rumor mill was working overtime this weekend. On Saturday, Brady, Julian Edelman, and Jimmy Fallon were courtside at the UNC-Syracuse game, and Edelman appeared to say he's coming back while Brady smirked next to him. Then they were spotted FaceTiming with Titans coach Mike Vrabel, whose team is in the running to land Brady. LeVar, do you like how Brady is handling this offseason?
I do. I mean, he's polarizing enough and He's interesting enough for people to be totally enthralled by what he may or may not do. And listen, he has every right to handle it how he's doing it. And I think it's very strategically sound. I think that you can look at it as it being a tad bit passive aggressive towards who I do not know.
FaceTiming at a college game.
Well, here's the thing,
everybody
though.
See that you're FaceTiming.
Did he put that out there?
Game?
Did he put that out there?
Yeah, but look.
Did he put that out there?
Come on. If you're Tom Brady and Julian Edelman and you're at a public event,
so he can't
do
be,
you think the cameras are not going to be on you?
He
and
can't
if you're
be a normal
FaceTiming
dude.
Some, come on.
You know how many times I've hit TJ up and was like, TJ, look at these race cars or what we got going on. Like,
and where
you
were
hit
you?
Your friends in the public.
Like where? Not yeah, Publix.
Why are you laughing?
Like, I mean,
why are you laughing?
The thing about this,
TJ. Look,
the thing about this is
he's not rolling with you right now. I'm telling you.
We're acting like Tom Brady is supposed to be like this introverted, non-social type of human that has no type of feelings or connection to reality.
But I don't want him to be a 14-year-old girl either.
But have we seen this side of Tom, especially when it came to this?
Come on.
Because he's been under this cloak, this mask for so long, other than the Uggs commercial, which I didn't really like. But with the Patriots, it was always the Patriots where you didn't show kind of any emotion in regards to, you didn't talk back, you didn't buck the system. But now it seems like he's that old guy, okay, that now just accomplished everything. That's like, I don't care. You know, I'm going to show who I really am in some aspects.
I like that. But I still think that he's in the moment. And the reason why everybody's paying attention to it is because they know that he's either coming back or he's leaving. And it's never been so much of an issue and a topic until now. And that's why you've never seen this side of it. You've never had the opportunity to see it. He's never been this close to leaving.
Help me out here.
I like it. And I'm going to tell you, like, why are we surprised? He had a Tom versus Time, basically reality TV show or Facebook show.
Yes, he did.
And so it's not a surprise that now that he's kind of established himself, he started to do commercials. He put this out on Facebook. He looked uncomfortable at the game when Edelman FaceTimed, right? He didn't look like he probably was like,
cuz he knows. Cuz he knows
but that's not on him.
But that's not on him. That was an uncomfortable feeling. How he's handling this is fine because he wants it to be intrigue on where everybody knows he's leaving New England. The people that don't,
I don't just, think
it's,
he
it's,
is.
It's wishful thinking.
Maybe it is.
He's okay, leaving New England, look, and so it's just if he, where am I going?
If he weren't an icon in New England, if this wasn't one of the major topics in the offseason, I get kind of teasing people and playing with them, but the whole like he's got to know what Edelman's putting out there. And he's got to know that if you're not just FaceTiming, it's one thing for you two to FaceTime.
In the moment.
You're FaceTiming with a head coach who wants you to play for
that's
him
his
next
old
year.
That's teammate. His old teammate.
Oh, wait. But
so is that tampering?
Well, no, okay. Well, it's something.
But isn't it kind of, I love this part because now he's taking control of his own narrative and what he wants and how he wants to control it. Because for so many years, hold on, wait. He is. And subtly, it doesn't have to be outright. He can throw little jabs out there, so you have to interpret what he wants you to do before everything was told for him. When the stuff went down with Jimmy G, it was more so, well, he doesn't want to mentor Jimmy G. He's, you know, this is the next guy coming up. So he could never really say anything or do anything. Right now, I think he's in a position in his career that he's still trying to control the narrative. He may not have been as comfortable doing it, but we wouldn't have seen Tom Brady do that five, 6 years ago.
But here's the thing. He's not controlling it.
Why not?
Because Edelman's the one who's throwing it out there, and then he has to react to what Edelman did.
But, Rick, is it intrigue right now where you don't know what he wants to do? In his mind, he knows what he wants to do.
Are you sure?
I believe Tom is old enough to know exactly what he wants to do.
I got to tell you.
I have to agree with that. He has a pretty good idea.
He got a plan on what he wants to do.
I get that, but this is a guy who has, as I said, he is a legend with the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. Playing this teasing game of, I'm staying or I'm going, who knows what I'm going to do. It's like you're playing with the heartstrings
of all
these people.
But how is he doing that?
He would prefer.
How is he doing
that? New England had valued him the way he values New England.
That's a different thing.
He would stay there. But because they did not, this intrigue is going to be there because they've created this. Not him. They've created
this. How have they created it? What have they done? They haven't said anything.
They said everything without saying anything. His contract, we can't franchise you. So they're basically saying, we know after this year you're going to, we're going to offer you peanuts every year. You're going to take it every year.
You're reading a lot into the situation.
No, I'm not reading. That's what the book is telling me.
Has Brady taken less?
He's always taken less.
For the last however many years.
He's always taken less.
For the last, and now he's tired of it because, I'm going to take less and they're going to give me weapons.
But they're not giving him what he wants.
Okay, I'm going to take less. They're going to give me, when they continue to say we're going to get you weapons and they don't.
Have we already determined what they're going to offer him this time around?
Obviously, it's not enough. But that's why
how do we know that?
It was reported that it was gotten
to this point. He would never.
Somebody reported that.
But you also know there's going to be talk inside. Just because we don't hear the narrative in the media doesn't mean that the agents and behind closed doors they haven't thrown out numbers.
When's the last time you've seen a player with the name Tom Brady hit the market? When a team really wants you, you do not hit free agency. They don't let that happen.
They might.
Yeah.
They might.
Uh-huh.
No. If they really want you, you sign a deal.
To me,
they sign you to a deal.
This is below Tom Brady.
Why?
Because if they decide not to give him anything, right? If they undercut him, and he has made it clear, you know what? I wanted to be back. He has not made that clear. He's doing the exact opposite. He goes, I'm playing the field. So when the Patriots go, yeah, you know what? We decided to move on. He no longer gets to play the card of, I've always been there for you. I've taken less. I can't believe you did this to me. But he's not doing that. When you're FaceTiming Mike Vrabel, you don't get to play that card anymore.
What do you think he just did the last year? He did that. That's all he's done.
Right.
They've shown him.
And they've won Super Bowls as a result of that.
Not without him.
Okay.
Well, with
fair enough, but the combination of what he's been able to do and what they've been able to do has worked to this point.
When they show you how they feel, why should you keep... You were the woman.
So he's been unhappy all this time with what he's been getting paid.
You meet a woman, you want to take her out. You send her multiple text messages. She don't respond. How many damn text messages you gonna send her?
You know what? No, no, no.
Until you realize she just don't want to go out with me. She ain't feeling me.
So we're not talking about a girlfriend. We're talking about the wife.
Okay, the wife.
And now the wife has to say, oh, you know, baby, I still love you. We've been married for 20 years. I'm aware of that. It's nice, but I already know. I know where we're at, okay?
You know where you're at.
You guys are making it sound like we've suddenly got to this point where they're undercutting him. He's taken less all these years, and they've made that work to the success of both of them. So if they decide to part ways, I want to be able to play the card of, you know what? I wanted to continue this. However we were going to do it, we're going to continue it. Tom Brady is not playing that card. Tom Brady is going, you know what? I've had about enough of this.
But when did he start doing that? Because if you track him during the course of the year and right after, he wasn't like this. He talked about ending his career in New England.
And what, he was doing this at the beginning of last season.
That's more your interpretation.
About ending his career. He knew that at that particular time, he wasn't going to get into it during the season. He wasn't going to let that...
Look at it objectively.
Look at it objectively. He really started to do after the season, not during.
Let's look at all the things that he was doing in social media last summer already. He was already hinting that this train was about to pull into the station.
Because he's privy to certain things that we aren't. That's why. Oh, we're going to give you this contract, and we agree not to franchise you. Mm-hmm. So you don't believe him and his agent, his representation, sat down and said, okay, this is what we're looking for.
A year in advance?
He knows.
This isn't beneath Tom Brady. Tom Brady isn't doing anything that would bring reproach on himself or his family or even the New England Patriots organization.
I think that's still to be determined.
No, I don't.
Depending on where his career goes next, what decision he makes, if he goes someplace. I mean, here's the other part. I'm still not 100% convinced that he's leaving New England.
Wait, 100%. I don't know, but all that equity 100%. that he's leaving, he's out of there. Right, but see, Rick, all that equity that he's built up over the years, you think is going to be diminished all right now? That's what you're saying.
LeBron James had where he was taking
Cleveland
his services
still love
to.
And he left.
And it diminished.
No, it diminished. But you're saying that he's putting that at harm's way, but Listen, he's always going to be tied to New England, that franchise, to the
Massachusetts,
no matter what.
Yeah. But he is the GOAT.
I mean, he's going to be the GOAT.
I look at him
he's gonna
as
be
the GOAT.
And so
standard.
He should continue to take less because that's how you look at him and that's how everybody else looks at him?
I'm not saying what he should take or how he should negotiate this. I'm just saying when you're FaceTiming a coach who's interested
he
in you...
He did not FaceTime.
And you have your buddy saying he's coming back.
It was his buddy that said it.
Tell him one more time.
Hey, if they play that clip again, he looked uncomfortable.
That's the same dude that ran over
that
top of
a
Lamborghini.
Like a
if Tom Brady was walking out of the club, he ain't getting arrested. You know who getting arrested? The friend that ran over top of the car.
No, but this is really interesting.
He's not responsible for what Edelman does.
LeVar, you believe he could go back there.
Yes.
So what the hell are we doing? Like, why
because
is he...
Because he ain't.
But he has...
That's like, done.
I can understand your position.
But
I don't understand
still,
yours
you
at all.
You guys still have not said something that's so egregiously done by Tom Brady that it says he's never going back to Foxborough based off of what he's doing.
I'm with you.
What is he doing?
I'm with you. It's not egregious. It's just kind of silly. Like, you're either going or you're staying. He's playing this game.
But if
game
he doesn't
of,
know,
you know what?
How did you feel
know,
when it came out Tom
he's
versus
been there
time?
All that time.
Did you? How'd you feel about that?
I thought it was some kind of goofy thing. That was marketing, man. Come on.
That's what this is.
BJ Armstrong is back with us. Let's turn to the NBA, where Trae Young has been having a stellar year and making highlight reels by nutmegging defenders all across the league. Well, Saturday night, he tried to go between the legs on Trevor Ariza. And Ariza took issue with it, throwing a forearm into the Hawks star. After the game, Ariza said, quote, "I'm not with the funnies." Jim, did Trey deserve that shot?
You know, I'm old school in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I really am. I mean, I'm not old school where it's like, you know, it's always like the NBA is not the way it
right.
used to be and the
right.
three-point shot.
Right.
And
they
this.
Don't do it the way you
know, the game has to evolve.
Sure.
But, I'm not mad at Ariza. I'm not mad at all.
So you liked it.
I liked it.
So Trey deserved that shot.
From Ariza.
Yes.
Because Ariza is an old school kind of player who's been around for a while. I mean, on the back end of it. I still played against
okay,
Ariza.
Okay, but let's say it was R.J. Barrett. You're going to say he did.
No, I'm going to say R.J. Barrett, this is what he grew up doing. He's probably his boy.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? It's a different dynamic. And the reason why I like it, too, is because Ariza touched him up a little bit, just enough to get a flagrant one. Just enough to get his attention,
but not
enough to get out the game. A flagrant one is just unnecessary contact.
I know,
really.
But a flagrant one in today's game.
I know, but again, but I like it where he sent the message just enough
right.
to say, listen, I'm not one of these young boys out here. Right. You can do it to them and get away with it, but I'm an old vet.
Right.
Here's a little something to touch you up and remind you, I don't get down like that. That's why I like that.
Yeah, well, no, no, he didn't deserve to get hit. But, Trevor Ariza grew up in the NBA in a different era. And what I liked about what Trevor Ariza did was, after the game was over with, they went over there, he went and talked to him.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very teachable moment for a young player because the game, if you did something like that back in
our day,
you would have got...
Next time you went to the hoop, you're in the stanchion.
But it was... It's a level of respect and professionalism that you have. And I think Trevor Ariza was letting him know that, yeah, that's how this generation mm-hmm. plays. But in his generation, you gotta keep this real. And Trevor Ariza was being authentic to what he was all about, who he was, and the era he came in, and he recognized that, you know what? What do you call it? The funnies? Is that the new term right now? I don't know if I'm old. I don't know if I'm cool enough to say that word.
Wait. No. When you read the newspaper, what was the comic section?
Oh, the funnies.
Called the funnies.
The funnies.
Yeah.
The funnies.
That's what we're talking about.
Well,
it's old school. No. But here's the thing. It's story time with Rick now because I happen to be a beat writer who covered B.J. Armstrong at the tail end of his career with the Golden State Warriors, and BJ told me, yeah, you know what? These young guns, man, I can't stay in front of them. So you know what I do defensively? I just run into them.
But he wasn't nutmeg.
No. But the fact of the matter was, I can't stay in front of these dudes. Trevor Ariza is basically saying the same thing. Look, dude, I can't stay in front of you, but you don't have to put the ball through my legs. Like, now you're clowning me. You're not beating me. Right. You're clowning me. But that's,
again, teachable moment from a vet.
Yes.
From, and again, does,
do you think this is going to change Trae Young?
No, but I guarantee you this. It's not a lot of old school vets that are still having quality time. I mean, like that. That he'll think about that if he does it against an older player that has a reputation of maybe being a little tougher.
Yeah.
Okay, I think he'll think about that. And again, does he deserve to get hit? No, I said, but by Trevor, an old school guy, and he know you're trying to embarrass him, I'm going to touch you up just enough for you to know that you can't get away with that with me.
I like to touch it up. I mean, when we say hit him, look.
No, I just
he just let
you.
Him know. I'm not
just,
good with
I
that.
I just touched
I'm not good
you.
With that. He didn't hurt him.
No, he
could have
really
him.
Laid him out.
Yeah.
I mean, really laid him out with an elbow, took him out. But
I don't
no.
think Trey didn't expect to get hit.
Oh, no, at all.
So that's what I'm saying. So, and I like that too.
Was very, like, very aware of what he was doing.
Exactly.
Yeah, very aware.
Yeah, and told him afterward. All right, let's move to Houston, where the Rockets just finished a great month. Going 9-2 in February with James Harden and Russell Westbrook both averaging well over 30 points per game. No doubt, Houston has been on a roll since the team made a full commitment to small ball, moving Clint Capela at the trade deadline. Jim, do you think it will keep working for them in the playoffs?
I like it because they're all bought into it. Yeah. If they stay right now in the fourth seed, they play Utah in the fifth seed, I still think that's a good matchup for them, even though they have Rudy Gobert.
Right.
This is not a first-time anomaly. We've seen the Hampton Five. We've seen Golden State play this, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Ball before. Now, they weren't committed to it the whole game.
Yes.
But this is something that we've seen before.
But this is different.
But it's different from this perspective. You probably don't have the shooting that you had at Golden State. In regards to two of the best that ever.
It was more off the ball movement.
It was a lot more
off.
But here's the thing, though. They said at one particular time, and BJ, you can understand this, that Golden State, the way they played, wasn't going to work.
Right.
But when they perfected that offense and their roster, the NBA morphed into something different. We're seeing something different in the NBA now with smaller lineups. So, yeah, it's easy to push back and say it doesn't work, but it's working for the Rockets, and it all depends on this. It's not a lot of teams that really just post up. It's not a lot of teams. Anthony Davis doesn't really post up. He wouldn't prefer to do that. So if a team does that, you're kind of taking them yourself out of what you run when you're trying to do that against the Rockets.
Well, I'll say this. You know, the Warriors had what we call the death lineup, right? They would use it sparingly, whether it's the fourth quarter, whenever it was needed. Consistently, I'm not buying into what the Rockets are doing just because I don't think you can play that way for a full 48 minutes and go through the playoffs, get 16 wins playing this style. I think it's interesting. I do. Mike D'Antoni has, you know what, they're all committed. They're all bought in. But I'm not sure that this will win the final game of the season. Right. And that's the only thing that I'm questioning.
Old
but
school.
It has been interesting
old
to
school.
Watch.
Old school.
No, I like it because they could pull an upset.
They could.
They could beat a team that you think they're not supposed to beat. But the death lineup wasn't just the death lineup because of its offense. It was also because of its defense. They could lock you down, and they could play a slower pace and suffocate you. And I don't see that with the Rockets. It also depends on Russ. That's a lot of energy to play the way Russ is playing, and they have to be consistently knocking down threes
I'm not knocking it. I think it has value, and it's all about matchups.
Uncle Jimmy is off today. But let's return to Lamar Jackson, who had a fantastic season winning MVP and electrifying the entire league. But Lamar raised some eyebrows this weekend, admitting that he hates to play against Patrick Mahomes, who has beaten them in both of their matchups so far. Jim, what's your approval rating for Lamar?
Well, since he's my cousin from another family, that's kind of what I look for, you know. I'm going to get – look, to me, he's one of the best at doing it. I mean – second youngest MVP after Jim Brown, led the league in TD passes. I'm going to give him a 20 on JP before. What else? I can't see. What else is going on? I can't see.
We got to work on your glasses.
All-time great. I got him a 20. Character, 25.
Yes.
Straight 25 because he's authentic. And again, authenticity, 25 because what he just said about Patrick Mahomes, said he hates to play. I got a total of 90. He's not 100 GOAT status. He's in that 90 range right there.
Okay. I'm going to go job performance 21. He was the league MVP. I'm going to take a few points off because of the playoff performance.
Okay.
All-time greatness 13. That's above the halfway point. I just haven't seen enough at this point. But when it comes to character and authenticity, I'm giving him a 24
what?
In both of the what? What?
One more point is
what,
25.
What, you want 25?
Yeah.
I know, he's still young.
So what?
I haven't seen everything.
You can have great character and authentic.
You got him high GOAT status. I think it's a little early for that.
He's my cousin.
I got him low GOAT
he's
status.
My cousin.
By the way, we asked you guys what you thought. You got him as an all-star, 66%. So a little less than us.